Welcome to Concord Matters, a show seeking for concord, agreement in Christian confession. Concord mattered to Jesus and Paul, and so it does to us also. Spend these next 60 minutes as we talk matters of concord. Concord Matters, a program produced by the Christ-Centered Leader in Confessional Broadcasting, Worldwide KFUO, online at KFUO.org.
This is Pastor Jolly John Lekumsky from St. Paul's Lutheran Church in New Athens and Trinity Lutheran Church in Darmstadt, and I will be your host today for Concord Matters. And before you go run to turn off your radio, we actually have some people worth listening to this afternoon. I have on my, well, who do I start with? I'm going to start with my wife. It's safer to always start with your wife. My wife, Lynn Lekumsky, who is also, tell them what you do, Lynn, for a living.
Besides being your wife?
Yeah, that's okay, a full-time job, I know, but.
I'm the principal at Emmanuel Lutheran School in Oakville, Illinois. Preparing students for life here and in eternity.
There you go.
Got
so
that mission statement in there.
That's their mission statement. And we also have Pastor Mark Neble. Where are you from and what's your mission statement, Mark?
I am the senior pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church in Red Bud, Illinois.
And did you have a mission statement? We don't have a mission statement at St. Paul or Darmstadt.
Well, as your circuit visitor, I think my mission statement is just to keep you in line.
And that, again, is a full-time job. So we do want to thank Mark Neble for joining us and my wife, Lynn. And it's kind of appropriate that we have a woman guest with us. In fact, a wife with us, because the subject today is the sixth commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery. And we certainly would welcome you to call in with your questions and your comments. It's always more fun when we have listeners joining us as well. And my understanding is, since this is the first time we've done it, we're just going to read through what we call the Large Catechism. You want to explain briefly what the Large Catechism is there, Mark, for people who maybe don't know what that's all about?
The Large Catechism was written by Dr. Martin Luther after a visitation of churches in his area of Saxony, churches that were coming out of Roman Catholicism and accepting the Reformation. After he made the visit of the churches, he realized there was a tremendous lack of understanding of the Christian faith, not only among the lay people, but even among the clergy. And so he wrote both a small catechism for instruction in the faith in home for parents to teach their children, but also the large catechism for the clergy to be better educated on the fundamentals of the Christian faith so that they could guide their flock.
And isn't that amazing that they went out and checked out the churches and the clergy themselves didn't really know the Ten Commandments and the Apostles' Creed and all the Lord's Prayer and all these other fundamentals. But it's a blessing because of that. Like you said, Luther then wrote this rather extensive commentary on all of these things. And for those of you who are either Jewish or Protestant, when I say the Sixth Commandment, I mean, you shall not commit adultery. Okay, that's the way the Roman and the Lutherans do it. I know there's other ways of numbering, but that's how we're numbering today. And that, in fact, is the commandment, you shall not commit adultery. I'm just going to start reading here from the Large Catechism. And then Lynn and Mark, if you will just jump in with your comments. The following commandments are easily understood from the explanation of the preceding commandments. For they are all to show that we must avoid doing any kind of harm to our neighbor. But they are arranged in fine order. In the first place, they talk about our neighbor personally. Then they proceed to talk about the person nearest him, or the closest possession, next after his body, namely his wife. And that's right, Lynn. You are my closest possession, nearest to my body. She is one flesh and blood with him, so that we cannot inflict a higher injury upon him in any good that is his. Therefore, it is clearly forbidden here to bring any disgrace upon our neighbor regarding his wife. The commandment really takes aim at adultery, because among the Jewish people it was ordained and commanded that everyone must be married. The young were engaged to be married early, and the virgin state was held in small esteem. Yet neither were public prostitution and lewdness tolerated. And I love this, Mark, Lynn, the little parenthetical note, as now, like maybe he actually wrote this within the last decade. Therefore, adultery was the most common form of unchastity among them. All right, take it away, Mark, Lynn.
Well, he's mentioning adultery. That is, the commandment addresses sexual intercourse outside of marriage, but it certainly does include what we would call fornication, that is sexual activity before marriage.
And can we say that on the radio, Buzz? Can we say fornicate? Okay, all right. This is, I'm going to be really uncomfortable with this show. I can just tell it. This is, okay, go ahead, Mark. I'm sorry.
Just putting the two of us together on the radio.
That itself should make people uncomfortable.
Is enough of a danger for KFUO. Yeah. And now you add this topic.
That's
and,
right.
And in the 91-year history of KFUO could come to a sudden crashing halt if the FCC gets a hold of us today.
That's right. They're not listening today.
But Lynn is here to keep us in line.
I think that was the point.
She's going to put us on our best behavior. Yep. You should be switching seats, though.
That's right. So she would be in between.
She'd be in between us because she is a rose between the thorns today.
There we go.
We have a topic, though, don't we?
Yes, we do.
All right.
So you're saying it's including fornication. So
it's
not just the breaking of a marriage relationship, but it would be the unchastity before marriage.
That would be, yes, a sexual intercourse before marriage, something that is common in our sex-saturated society. Yep. It is in the media, throughout the media, unfortunately. And because of that, our younger people see that and feel that that is the way they should go. 97% of all sexual activity on television is between unmarried persons.
Is that right?
So if the proverbial man from Mars, landed on the Earth and decided he would figure out human society by watching our television, he would think that humans had sexual intercourse before they got married, and after they got married, they stopped.
Is that right? That's an interesting statistic.
You want another one?
Well, sure. Go ahead. You've obviously done some research here. Go ahead.
0.1% of adult life is engaged in any type of sexual behavior, from hand-holding on up.
Is that right?
And yet you wouldn't know that from watching our television programming, watching our commercials on television, even billboards as you go down the highway. We live in a sex-saturated society.
I know it bothers me that I can't even go out of the grocery store line anymore because all of the magazines that are around there, every one of them has something to do with sex. And I can't even watch the toothpaste commercials anymore because that's where they're all focused as well. I don't know about the 0.1% for Lynn and I. We hold hands a lot. So...
Maybe I'm here to keep the two of you in line.
That might be.
We're married. It's okay.
That's right. That's what this is all about. That's not adultery. So it's not that sex is a bad thing. That's what we're saying. Sex is actually a good thing. I think God created it. He made us male and female, but it's the context. Lynn, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, however, we do have a clear word of God about how we are to behave towards one another. I did look up some Bible verses, and here's one that we could consider. Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul. And honestly, people don't think about that it's waging war against their soul. People see nudity and don't even think, oh, let's cover it up. Let's take care of this person. Let's protect this person. But they go ahead and they don't abstain from the passions of the flesh. And I just thought that would be an interesting Bible verse to consider that since we are talking about adultery.
Read it one more time, Lynn.
Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul. And that's from 1 Peter 2:11.
I know it's interesting that exhortation about the passions of the flesh is attached to the fact that we're sojourners
And exiles.
Mark, response, thought, comment?
Well, that is where young people start seeing their value. If they get caught up in sexual activity, they begin to feel the only thing they have of themselves to offer to anyone else is their sexuality. Mm. And they don't see their value in their knowledge, their ability, their personality. It's simply in their body.
I thought it was interesting in the quote we just read you, he talked about the Jewish people. It was ordained and commanded that everyone must be married, and the young were engaged to be married early. and the Virgin estate was held in small esteem. Well, apparently it's also held in small esteem now. Thank you, Buzz, is reminding us if we want callers, they need to know how to get a hold of us. Thank you, Buzz. So the local number is 314-821-0850, 314-821-0850, or anywhere in America, in North America, it says. So this would include Mexico and Canada. 1-800-730-2727. That's 730-2727. And you can email us. We love the email. It's just KFUO at KFUO.org. So, yeah, please join the discussion. Yeah, what's happening now is my understanding is, I don't know, you're the guy with all statistics, is that people aren't getting married until their late 20s, mid-30s and stuff like that. And doesn't that just open the door then for more promiscuous behavior and unchastity? Because we're kind of wired to have sex. That much I understand. So marriage is probably a good thing in that respect. But I don't know. Lynn, Mark, what?
Well, you know, we are wired to have intercourse with the opposite sex. And I think that as this longing for one another comes at different stages in each life, girls earlier than boys, usually, because...
Really?
Yes.
So wait a second. That longing comes earlier for girls than it does boys?
It's usually comes around the time of the first ovulation, yes, which is earlier and earlier now. I see girls growing up in second grade, third grade, fourth grade, you know, very, very young. And boys just don't get that until later. But the thing is, with guys, it seems like that's all they think about. You know, once they get to that stage, this is it. Heaven help the couple that's not married and they hit each other at the same time with that kind of longing. And if they don't have any ability to say, no, this is not what I want, I think that's going to be the difficulty in their lives.
See, now what you made me think, though, I think that's part of the problem is the detachment of the longing from the acts of sexual intercourse. I mean, that's how the thing was designed. In fact, my understanding is that when you have sexual intercourse, there is a chemical. What is the chemical? Oxytonin. Oxytonin? Is that what it's called? Okay. Which is actually designed to bind you, to want to stay and be with that person. But if we're having all of this intercourse apart from marriage, then it no longer has any effect. It's no longer drawing us together at all, which is what intercourse is actually supposed to do, to keep us in that closeness.
Or it actually could bind you with several people, and that would be very confusing.
Trust me, being married to one woman is confusing enough. Mark, jump in on this conversation.
I'm going back to the statistics. Yeah. Average age of a first marriage is about 28.
Is it? Okay.
That's quite a bit higher than what it used to be. Yep. Now, obviously, that's not going to be the average age of desire for sexual intercourse.
Sure.
So you have many years of not being married where the desire, the passion for that activity is there. About 50% of adults are married. The rest are either single before marriage or divorced or widowed. So marriage is close to a minority anymore. And yet human sexuality is still there for everyone. And many do not fight that desire. They express that desire outside of marriage and don't work on an emotional relationship. When a relationship goes to the physical too soon, the emotional or even, dare we say, spiritual aspects of the relationship are not allowed to grow. They are stunted and they can't be developed because the focus becomes on the physical.
And Mark, I really appreciate you bringing up that the spiritual dimension, because I think that's what we're going to learn as we continue to read through this large catechism. For us as Christians, marriage is about a spiritual relationship. It has its practical effects. It is a good way to deal with these lusts, these desires of the flesh. It's a proper way God has given to handle that decently in an order. And it's also for the creation of children. We're gonna see that. But I think we fail to see that one of the chief purposes in God bringing us together, husband and wife, is that we would be strengthened spiritually in our faith to the Lord, and obviously having someone that we can have love to one another, a neighbor, as it were, that actually lives with us day in and day out, that we can show our care for. And I think that's the big problem. I don't think people see the spiritual dimension. It's just about whatever earthly happiness it can bring. Maybe they are good lovers, so that brings a sexual pleasure. And the chief purpose of marriage, which is a spiritual purpose, is left out entirely. That is my opinion, anyway.
One more statistic.
Sure.
And I'm going to preface it, okay? Sometimes I've noticed teenagers who engage in sexual activity who are thinking things such as, well, it didn't work out for my parents. I'll show them. It's going to work for me. We're in love. It's going to work. And the statistic I want to bring up is that the brain is not totally formed until about age 25. So what you want when you're 13 is not necessarily what you want when you're 18, or necessarily what you want until you're 25. And maybe that accounts for some of the later marriages. I wouldn't say that, though. I'm just saying people need to start thinking about what they really want and assess, is this correct? At this time in my life, it is correct. Will it be what I want later on? So the big thing is that when you are finally married, do you want to be lying in bed crying because you married the wrong person?
Hmm. Mark, Lynn, anything else you want to say about this opening paragraph of the Large Catechism? The only thing that I would want to add is the emphasis here that this is, again, all about the love of the neighbor. I think that's one of the great emphasis in the Large Catechism dealing with the Ten Commandments, that it's not about being moral. For us, it's not primarily about being a moral or a good person, but it is the directions God has given us that we can be people who love the neighbor. So adultery is chiefly a sin, not because it's an immoral act, but because it's an act that really brings harm to ourselves and to our neighbor. So, Lynn, Mark, anything else? Or do you want me to read on, or what would you like to do? Or
go ahead.
Let's read on.
Okay.
Well, wait.
All right.
And I can testify to it does harm the neighbor.
Yeah, that's what makes this kind of a unique situation. And Lynn, I know you said you wanted to talk about it, so why don't we do that at this point? Because the commandment is you shall not commit adultery. And Lynn, you have been one who has experienced.
Yes, my former husband was diagnosed with situational depression, which led to alcoholism, which led to adultery, which led to abandonment of the family. And that's why he's my former husband. You know, it took a long time for me to be able to say, oh, I have to break my vows, because he already has several times over with a multitude of people. So the thing is, when you're in that situation, the one who's left behind is the one who's really hurting. And I just wanted to say at this point that it's a lie of the devil that you will never be loved, or that you are unlovable. If you're listening and you know that you've been a victim of your spouse's adultery, remember that the Lord loves you and people can and will love you. If the devil's telling you that you're unlovable, that's just a lie.
And I think you said you had a Bible passage that comforted you when you were going through these things, Lynn.
Well, there were two of them.
Okay.
One was kind of... it comforted me because I thought the Lord would take vengeance. It was likewise husbands.
Don't mess with Lynn, Mark, I'm telling you.
Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so your prayers may not be hindered. And I kept thinking, oh boy, are his prayers being hindered? You know, so I almost have to confess a sin there when I read that. But the one that encouraged me the most was from Isaiah 62. You shall no more be termed forsaken, because when you are abandoned, you feel forsaken. It's going back to the Bible, it says, "And your land shall no more be termed desolate, but you shall be called, My delight is in her, and your land married, for the Lord delights in you." And further on, at the bottom of the next verse, it says, "So shall your God rejoice over you." And I think that when I felt the most unlovable, I needed to know that God really was, at that point, my husband. At that point, he was saying to me, "I'm not really forsaken, and his delight is in me." And that's really something that helped me through the many years of a depression and, well, 2 years of depression and the many years of longing for being loved once again.
And I think that's important that you bring that up, Lynn, because the reason we Christians are so concerned about marriage is because it is the biblical picture. God says, this is the picture I'm going to give you here on earth of my relationship with you. And so naturally then, yeah, adultery would be particularly offensive with us. Divorce is also a difficulty for us because marriage is supposed to be the picture of the commitment and love that Christ has for his bride, the church.
And I think we find out here that God knows what he's talking about.
Really?
He does. He does. And he's not giving us this commandment to take our fun away.
Yeah.
Quite the opposite. He's giving this to us for a full life, for well-being, for our own satisfaction and joy. When we think we're smarter than God and that we can go against his will, then we really mess life up and we put ourselves in bad situations and we're very unhappy. And the secular science, the studies show those very things. And in working with couples, both pre-marriage and if I have the opportunity to work with them when they're struggling with marriage, I'll quote some of these, the results of this research, but only to then let them know, look, God knows what he's talking about. When we try to go against his will, we suffer.
And again, not only is the commandment then addressed to our love for the neighbor, but it also addresses God's love for us. Yeah, yeah. All right, I will continue to read. "But among us, there is such a shamefulness and the very dregs of all vice and lewdness." You know, it's great, isn't it, Mark, when you read this and realize apparently things were pretty bad back 500 years ago, too. We think somehow we've gotten to the point where it's worse than it'd ever be, but no, apparently Luther thought it was pretty bad. They're the dregs of all vice and lewdness. "Therefore, this commandment is directed against all kinds of unchastity, whatever it may be called. Not only is the outward act of adultery forbidden, but also every kind of cause, motive, and means of adultery. Then the heart, the lips, and the whole body may be chaste and offer no opportunity, help or persuasion toward inchastity. Not only this, but we must also resist temptation, offer protection and rescue, honor wherever there is danger and need. We must give help and counsel so as to maintain our neighbor's honor. For whenever you abandon this effort, when you could resist unchastity, or whenever you overlook it as if it did not concern you, you are truly guilty of adultery as the one doing the deed. To speak in the briefest way, this much is required of you. Everyone must live chastely himself and help his neighbor do the same. So by this commandment, God wishes to build a hedge around about and protect every spouse so that no one trespasses against him or her." All right. What did you find striking in that section, Mark, Lynn?
Help their neighbors do the same. It's not enough just to obey these words on our own. We are to look out for those around us and help them obey these words. And how opposite is our society wired today? The encouragement is to have sexual intercourse outside of marriage. And we mentioned that through the media, not just the programming of television, even the commercials. When you think you're watching something okay on TV and then a commercial comes on and it's an eye opener and what exactly are they trying to sell? You know, when it's razor blades and nobody has clothes on? I don't understand that.
Right. As far as I know, that's right. I just, you know, I could have all my clothes on. I could still shave. All right.
Also, then, I think it's along the lines of what Pastor Mark was talking about. It's we should be encouraging people to stay married. Just because you have an argument doesn't mean that it's the end of the marriage or end of the world. You made a commitment for life. Stick to it. And that's what we should be encouraging people to do. And then the other thing that struck me is when you're trying to get your neighbor to do what's right, when I have talked with younger pastors' wives, I have said to them, watch your husband at the door. If somebody hugs him too close, stand right next to him. And I think that's good advice for women to follow. You, if you're where your husband is and somebody's getting too close, you need to encourage your husband and that person to know that you're there. The wife, that is.
Not, yes. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And I just like the emphasis again that it isn't, we're not, the chief thing is not morality. I'm not saying we're supposed to be immoral, but again, the chief thing is the protection of ourselves, the protections of others, in the service of the love of the neighbor. And like you said, so what you're trying to do there is trying to be protective of your husband, lest he be tempted, and also provide the hedge that we talked about earlier in this text, too, around the spouse and around against him or her, as the text says.
Well, and I think that's where a lot of marriages are difficult today, because they're not, people aren't together. They might be together in the bed at night, but all day long they're up and taking care of kids and they're going to work and somebody's fixing dinner while somebody else is working. There's a mom or dad's a taxi cab for their high school or almost ready to drive kids. And mom and dad aren't always together to be able to say, hey, we're a couple. And it's all the busyness can be very divisive.
I'm going to get the opinion here, Mark, that the whole world is kind of designed to undermine this institution of marriage, not only in terms of the media, but the lifestyle that we lead. And
Marriage is under attack in our culture and in our society, and there's a lot I have to say about that.
Well, go ahead.
Is that going to happen after a break, though, Buzz?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going for a break. When we come back, Mark will tell you the marriage is being attacked.
Worldwide KFUO salutes our day sponsor on this Tuesday, December 8th, 2015. Today's day sponsor is Marie Delasu. Today's day sponsor has made a contribution to Worldwide KFUO in honor of her 97th birthday today. Once again, we say thank you to Marie Delasu of St. Louis, Missouri, today's Worldwide KFUO day sponsor.
What touches your heart during the Christmas season? For many, it's the sharing. The sharing of the time. The sharing of God's blessings. The sharing of God's divine gift of His Son, Jesus Christ. Hi, this is Rich Robertson, President and CEO of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. As I reflect back over this past year, I think about how much is shared through the LCMS ministries. People's lives are changed by the message and the actions of our church body. The Lutheran Church Extension Fund is blessed to share in these experiences through the investments, loans, and support services we provide individuals, church workers, and ministries. May God bless you and your family this sacred season of our Savior's birth.
Our Synod partners are vital to LCMS Ministries' mission and more. Join us this month as we lift up these precious partnerships and as the Synod provides information and resources, including bulletin inserts, prayers, and more at lcms.org/focus/partners. lcms.org/focus/partners.
From John Bunyan's The Pilgrim's Progress.
I saw a man clothed in rags, standing in a certain place, a book in his hand, and a great burden upon his back. I saw him open the book and read therein, and as he read, he wept and trembled, and he cried out, "What shall I do?"
John Bunyan's 17th century book, The Pilgrim's Progress, is classic literature's most famous allegory. By the end of the 1650s, John was a popular preacher and writer, teaching the Bible in common, understandable language in the tradition of Martin Luther and John Calvin. When he refused to give up preaching without a license, he was sentenced to 12 years in jail, where he preached to inmates. The Pilgrim's Progress, written after his release, became a major Protestant teaching tool, as well as a standard of English literature, one of the most reprinted religious texts in the world.
Brought to you by Museum of the Bible.
This is Concord Matters, and I'm John Lukumsky from St. Paul's in New Athens and Trinity in Darmstadt. I have with me my wife, Lynn Lukumsky, who also hangs out at those same locations, as well as being principal at Emmanuel Oakville. And we also have with us the senior pastor. Does that refer to your position or your age? Reverend Mark Neville from St. John's in Redbud.
Cute smile there. You missed it.
Join us, if you would, please. Here's the local number, 314-821-0850, or anywhere in North America, 1-800-730-2727. And as always, just email us at kfuo@kfuo.org. Mark, when we took the break, you were going to talk about how marriage is under attack.
Marriage is. We live in a throwaway society. When was the last time you had a toaster fixed?
Never.
Can you get a toaster fixed anymore?
Why would you want to? Just buy another one.
You just buy another one. Right. It's just cheaper to do that. Cheaper and easier to do that. And this throwaway society we live in has affected marriage. When a difficult time happens in a marriage, we think, well, that's it. Let's throw away this marriage and let's get another one.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. What happens to people is when the proverbial honeymoon is over and the emotional and the passionate aspect of the relationship fades, as is normal, they feel that the marriage is over. Because they equate "I love you" with "I am in love with you." And when the feeling of being in love with someone fades, they don't allow the commitment of love to kick in. Instead, they think it's time to throw away that marriage and look for something or someone else, and thinking that they would be better off doing that. Here again, statistics show that's not the case. Studies have been done of couples who are struggling with their marriage. 5 years later, they come back to those same couples and find out that those that stayed together were happier than those who had gotten a divorce. Stereotypically, a husband is going to leave a marriage because he has, or he thinks he has, someone else lined up for him. Whereas a wife will tend to leave a marriage because she is unfulfilled in the relationship and does not feel the husband wants to work on that or to improve their relationship. But something I've been noticing recently, John, and I don't know if you have up in your part of paradise there in New Athens, but it's been wives who are leaving the marriage relationship. And they are doing that in large part because they have someone else in mind or something else going on. And so they are leaving their husbands and even their children. You know, John, who's the last person to hear about this?
The pastor. That's right. When it's all said and done, then they come to us. Yeah.
Right. And in the times that I've actually tried to offer some assistance, particularly when there's children involved, I'm told, "Oh, pastor, we've got it all worked out. It's going to be fine. Yep. Kids are going to be fine with this." And they feel that, they can raise children just fine in a divided or a split home, where the children go back and forth between one home and the other. And I like to say, well, yeah, I guess that is possible. It's also possible to eat a grilled cheese sandwich with the toasted bread in one hand and the melted cheese in the other hand, but it's going to be awfully messy. And the same is true trying to raise children when the parents are separated, divided. It's hard enough to raise children when the parents are together and on the same page.
Yeah, yeah.
But when the parents are divided, then there's the guilt that kicks in over the divorce, and you tend to try to make up that to the child by giving him some stuff, being a little lax, on the discipline.
Well, yeah, you got to be, because otherwise they're going to say, I want to go live with the other parent. Yeah,
and
yeah.
The kids pick up on that pretty quickly, and they will play one parent off against the other.
Yeah, I came out of a divorced family, and I will affirm that. And I would also affirm the fact that the problem is the kids think they're responsible. And you can tell them, no, mommy and daddy just having problems. But no, as one who came from a divorced family, somewhere deep down inside you think, I must have done something. And that's why mom and dad can't live together with each other anymore.
And no matter how much you tell the child, I will never stop loving you.
Ah.
You had said that. About daddy, or you had said that about mommy, and now you don't.
Yep.
And if you can stop loving mommy or stop loving daddy, you could stop loving me.
That's the scary thing.
And the stability of life for a child is in their parents' relationship. And when that relationship is broken, the child loses their own life stability.
And we're not saying, and indeed, that's the thing we got to remember in all of this. The success of any family situation comes from the grace and mercy and love that we have in God. And so I know, Lynn, you came out of a really, really bad situation with your family, and yet you have really some of the finest kids that I know around. And so we're not saying, people, that if you're in a divorce situation that things cannot be worked together for good. We're saying that that has to come from the grace of God, and it can come from the grace of God. But, oh my goodness, people, it is so much easier if you don't have that division. But thankful God is a God of great power and great grace that can overcome that. Yeah, Lynn, go ahead.
It's just getting through those years. I know for my family, I had one child in particular who could not walk the aisle of the church without humping over the shoulders and hanging the head. And my situation was very different because the husband or the dad did not want to have anything to do with his children. He didn't want to see them. He didn't want to raise them. He gave up all responsibility. But it does very much ring true that the children need both parents. They need that stability. And even as a divorced woman, I can still say divorce hurts. It hurts the both spouses, and it hurts the children. And you don't always see those hurts until maybe even 10, 15 years down the road.
I wanted to pick on one other thing you said, too. Not pick on, but actually pick up on. You had talked about love not being a feeling. And I've several times talked about that this commandment is all about love. And I'm glad you said it, because I want to clarify that. I'm talking about love the way Scripture talks about it, where you make a conscious decision to do something, maybe even against your own feeling, but you're going to do it because you know it's what's good for the person that you're talking about, that you're concerned about. And so that's the issue here. And I like what you said too, Mark. Come to us. You have resources with pastors. We know marriages have difficulties. In fact, the statistic I read is that 80% of all marriages go through a time where the spouses are opposed to each other, are separate, or in some way like. A lot of those marriages, though, can get back together. As you said, they're actually happier. They're stronger as a result of that. And we're here as church professionals to help you accomplish that, again, with the help and with the grace of God.
And really, doesn't it all start with premarital counseling?
So here's what Mark wants to do. We're going to read you this next paragraph, and then we're going to be the young couple, and Mark is going to give us some premarital counseling. Right? That's what you said you wanted to do?
That is what we will do.
All right. Here we go. So here's the next paragraph. But this commandment is aimed directly at the state of marriage and gives us an opportunity to speak about it. So again, that's the chief thing. We don't really want to focus on adultery and divorce. We want to focus on the blessing of marriage. First, understand and mark well how glorious gloriously God honors and praises this estate. For by his commandment, he both approves and guards it. He has approved it above in the fourth commandment, honor your father and your mother. But here he said, as we said, hedged it about and protected it. Therefore, he also wishes us to honor it and to maintain and govern it as a divine and blessed estate, because in the first place, he has instituted it before all others. So that's an interesting thought. Before anything else, he had created man and woman separately, as is clear. This was not for lewdness, but so that they might live together in marriage, be fruitful, bear children, and nourish and train them to honor God. All right, Pastor, we're here. We're planning on getting married. We've been living together for a while, and we think now it's time to really kind of settle down and tie the knot, right? That's what you're getting, isn't it, Mark?
Okay, yeah. So yeah. Young John and young Lynn come in, and John says to me, Pastor, I want to get married. I found the woman of my life. She's a babe.
I want to marry her. You can see that. All right.
And so we would sit down, and the more time that a couple spends preparing for the marriage, not the wedding, the wedding's one day. The marriage is the days, the weeks, the months, the years, the decades after that. The more time a couple spends in pre-marriage preparation is going to lead to a high rate of success in that marriage. So we would sit down. One of the things we're going to talk about is this whole matter of sexuality. And one question I'm going to ask the two of you, and you'd write that down separately, but I'm going to ask you to come up with three reasons for sexual intercourse within the commitment of marriage. In other words, why do it? Now,
you have to ask.
I do.
Pastor, I think I need to sit down and have a little discussion with you.
So, couples usually get the first reason, typically the second one, but not the third. And the third is a key one.
Okay, so what is the key first one. Of all, what are the first two answers that you usually get?
Well, you're not going to answer?
No.
Oh, come on.
Well, go ahead, Lynn, you answer.
First of all, it's fun.
Okay, I'll buy
all
that.
All right. Second of all, it's for procreation.
Reproduction. There we go. Ding, ding, ding. All right. Okay. Medical science is trying to give us other ways of doing this, but God's way still the most enjoyable. Lynn goes right to the fun, all right, and the easiest as well. Here is our Lord, the creator of the heavens and the earth, the universe and everything in them, and he is allowing us, he is giving us the privilege of, in this instance, being somewhat of a co-creator with him.
Yes.
That is making sure human race continues on with the next generation. So we get that privilege through reproduction. Okay, so that's number one reason. Number two reason, what for sexual intercourse within the commitment of marriage, why bother?
So the fun isn't one of the three? Because that would be my number one. Well, frankly, Pastor, at our age, we're not really looking for the procreation.
Okay, maybe we can put fun in number two here, but okay. I've got a nicer word
for it. Okay, what's your word?
Okay. Intimacy.
Intimacy. Okay, yes.
Something that celebrates your closeness and brings you closer to one another. Something that you could not do, something that you would not do with anyone else.
Which goes to the whole adultery thing, because that's what, then the intimacy is broken. Then it isn't something just between you and one other person.
And the whole one flesh union that marriage is to be. Now, here's where we see differences between men and women.
Okay.
What do you know? When there are problems in a relationship, guess what solution the guy comes up with?
More sex?
You got it. There we go.
I am a guy.
We'll solve this, honey, just by going into the bedroom.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the female view of that is when there are problems in the relationship.
More talk.
You've got to solve the problem in the relationship before.
You bet.
Anything's going to happen in the bedroom.
Because it's just not going to happen.
It is not.
Can't we talk after? I'm willing to compromise.
I told you that's all the guys are thinking about.
Now, that's one and two. We've got reproduction. We've got intimacy. Now, what might be the third reason for sexual intercourse within the commitment of marriage?
I didn't know there was going to be a test. I just wanted to come and visit with the pastor so we could get the wedding and have it over and done with. I don't know. Go ahead.
Is it commanded by God? Is that an easy answer?
Okay.
Is that an easy answer?
Here's the easy answer. To prevent adultery.
Oh, okay.
Ah.
Right? Because God has given us this desire, this passion, this urge.
Exactly.
And he has given us marriage as the context to fulfill or satisfy this urge and desire. And you know what? We actually have a Bible passage for that.
And what Bible passage is this?
1 Corinthians chapter 7. Since there is so much immorality, each man should have his own wife and each woman her own husband. The husband should fulfill his marital duty to his wife and likewise the wife to her husband. The wife's body does not belong to her alone, but also to her husband. In the same way, the husband's body does not belong to him alone, but also to his wife. Do not deprive each other except by mutual consent and for a time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer. Then come together again so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. I had a professor in the seminary who told us this story of when he was a parish pastor, as we are, and a member of his congregation came into his office, a female member, and she said, "Pastor, I found my husband cheating on me with another woman. That means I can divorce him, right?"
Here's where a little knowledge is a dangerous thing.
And the pastor sat her down and talked to her. Come to find out, she had refused to have sex with her husband for 6 years.
Whoa, my goodness.
That excuse his adultery? I don't know.
No.
But it certainly shows who really broke the marriage covenant in that instance. And in one respect, almost forced him to look elsewhere.
And I'm just going to add another angle, which you probably will be bringing up later on, but my mind's just jumping ahead here to the adultery thing, preventing adultery as God forbids Israel to commit adultery with other gods in the Old Testament, and how we will know, of course, from the New Testament that our relationship, God's relationship with us, Christ is the groom and the church is the bride, and he would not allow adultery in that relationship either.
And it's interesting in confirmation how easily kids get mixed up the words idolatry and adultery. But you know what? There's a connection, isn't there? Because idolatry is a spiritual adultery. And adultery, the physical adultery, usually happens because you've been worshiping some sort of false god.
There you go. That's right. That attraction to the other. Yeah.
Do you want to continue our pre-marriage preparation?
Well, sure.
You know, that first question was hard, but go ahead.
All right.
And by the way, I just want to affirm that the three things you said actually come right out of the scripture, right? From the fruitful and multiply to the passage you said in Corinthians about a means of relieving, it's better to marry than to burn with passion, and the two becoming one flesh, which is the ultimate intimacy. But yes, Pastor, is there more? Is there more to it than this?
Isn't that amazing? We got together and fell into a Bible study. All right. Now, the next question for this young couple is, where did you first learn about the birds and the bees?
You know, my mom taught me about the birds and the bees, and I just thought it was birds and bees. And honestly, she didn't say too much. I went to college, and my suite mate in Concordia Ann Arbor, we had suites, was going to be a social worker, and she said, "Here's a book, Lynn, look at it." And I did, and that's how I learned.
Okay.
So, Everything You Wanted to Know About Sex But You're Afraid to Ask was the name of it. So, birds and bees, that talk just does not happen.
All right. I forgot to tell you, there's four answers, by the way.
There's four answers.
You got to come up with four answers.
Okay.
And Lynn's danced around about three of them.
Is that right?
Yes.
Is that right?
She's
a
good student.
I was going to say, I think I just, whatever I knew, I got from my friends.
You've got the fourth.
Yeah. Is that the fourth?
That is the fourth. Okay. We're going to talk about media.
All right.
Media glamorizes it in an unrealistic manner. All right. We've got school. Typically, for me, ninth grade health class. That's where you got the dry, dull technical terminology. Friends or peers. And that's where it becomes dirty. That's where you learn the slang. Yeah. And then parents, who should be the ones teaching us about this topic?
Well, obviously, it should be the parents,
yeah, right, yeah. Because they're the ones that can place it within the context of a lifetime commitment of God-given marriage. Who's the most hesitant to talk about this with us?
The parents.
Parents. Yeah. Why?
Because it's an uncomfortable, you're even making me uncomfortable.
Well, it's because, you know, back when we grew up, married couples did not sleep in the same bed on television, did they?
No, they didn't. That's right.
And we grew up in an era where you couldn't say the word pregnant without people looking at you and thinking, oh, you are not a true lady if you're going to say that word.
And I was going to say too, Mark, see, now in my generation too, no, they did not talk about those things in health class.
We didn't have health class.
Well, we did, but we didn't talk about that. That was the chapter that the teacher skipped over.
I think it
was in the book, but we didn't talk about it.
I think it's difficult for parents because the children realize, oh, that's how I came about.
Yes.
You did that? You did what?
We'll give them the idea that we do it. And two, we're afraid that we will...
Give them the idea to do it themselves.
Pique their interest early.
Yep.
Now, having had these conversations with couples before marriage for a lot of years, I figured when it was my time, because my parents didn't talk to me about this either. One time. You know what helps? To have animals around.
That's right.
Yeah.
And if you're a farm family, it's a lot easier.
Mom, why is this going on out in our front yard with our dog? And all the blood left her face. And she went to the bookshelf and pulled out a book that I had never seen before. And she sat me down on the couch. I was about 9 years old. And she paged through it. And she said, do you have any questions? No.
No.
And she put the book back on the shelf. And 40 years later, when I cleaned her house out, it was still in the same spot. There it was. So I thought when came time for my oldest to go off to school as a 14-year-old attending St. Paul Lutheran High School in Concordia, Missouri. That's a commercial, by the way.
There you go.
I'm going to do a better job. I'm going to sit down with her. I'm going to say, okay, Mary, the world is full of evil boys. And so this is what you are to do. And after about 10 minutes of being tongue-tied and making a fool of myself, I finally just gave up because she was looking at me like I was an idiot, and I probably was. And I don't know if I helped her at all. And it wasn't a week that she was there. Sure enough.
Is that right?
She calls up. Can I start dating Dad? Yeah. And one of those evil boys.
Yep. Yeah.
So I don't know. As a dad of daughters, I wore my KFUO shirt.
Yep.
There's my second shameless plug. But I thought about wearing my DADD t-shirt. Dads against daughters dating. But then I'm not sure, because then you don't worry about this particular boy. You have to worry about every other boy in the world.
Yep,
yes.
Yep. Yeah. Lynn, any other comments that you want to make?
Well, I think he's right. Daughters dating, that's a scary time for dads, especially. Yep. I mean, it can be a scary time for moms, too.
Because we know. We know what is in the minds
of
those.
You know, I don't think I had any clue growing
up
that that's all guys thought about. I had to be a lot older before I figured it out.
Of course, Lynn has taught me that that's all that women think about, too. I did not realize that until I married her. And found out, women talk about this.
Actually, that's a little bit wrong.
Well, no, that's not what you told me.
Yes. Well, yes.
Now that she's on radio, she's backtracking. But anyway, go ahead, sweetheart.
That doesn't make any difference what you think, dear. I know it's in my heart. So anyway, I think that is a scary time when we have to tell our children, hey, this is what what life is really about sexually. And if we can talk to our children about what God's expectations are before they hit that age, I think that's very important. Although I have to admit, I made a mistake there with my fourth daughter. She was going to take sex education in high school, and I said, honey, the only thing you have to remember is God's expectations of you, and then you don't have to worry about the rest. So did she study for her class? No, because I had already told her everything she needed to know.
I hear the music. Mark, thank you for being with us. Lynn, thank you for being with us. It's been a fruitful discussion, and it will continue next week on the Sixth Commandment on Concord Matters.